and see the ball come back to Paul, and he tries to kick it into the stands, and you can see right away it hit a fan over here, and the official was looking right at him.
And he immediately went and apologized to the fan, but if he's thrown out, he's got to leave.
No, he's gone. He's got to get off the bench. He's gone. You got to control your emotions.
So the night is over for Paul George with 1:42 to play.
Ackman, your host of Almighty Ballin, the proprietor of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Check it out. We're a featured network at blogtalkradio.com/ABPN and at almightyballer.com. Today I'm talking about the Indiana Pacers with Grant Apseth. Did I get that pronunciation right?
Yeah, you got it.
All right, awesome. Yeah, Grant Apseth writes about the Indiana Pacers. So which sites do you write for?
I write full-time for sneakerreporter.com.
All right, cool. So what's your Twitter handle?
Just my full name, at Grant Apseth, A-F-S-E-T-H.
All right, well, we're just about good to get going. This episode is brought to you by Audacity. Check out audacitytrial.com/almighty. So that's audibletrial.com/almighty to get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial, and most importantly, support the network and the podcast. And then also SteinerSports.com is sponsoring this podcast. Use the promo code Almighty to get 20% off any memorabilia. And again, support the podcast. I really appreciate it. All right, well, good to go. So for listeners that have listened from about pretty much once the Indiana Pacers started making moves this offseason, you guys know my feelings about the Indiana Pacers. I've talked about it with more than a few people. It's come up. I've gone on other shows and talked about it too. I'm pretty low on this Indiana Pacers team. And I feel like a decent place to start is that, did you hear that yesterday the player of the weeks for each conference was announced, and LeBron James was the player of the week in the East, and then George Hill, who is right now seventh in box score plus minus, was the player of the week in the West?
Oh, yeah, that's the way the trade is looking right now. It definitely looks like a lopsided victory for the Jazz with the statistical standpoint of George Hill, because you look at Jeff Teague, and he's shooting like in the 30s from the field, in the 20s from three, and he's just been really ugly. So, yeah, it definitely looks a lot in Utah's favor right now.
Yeah, and to be fair, that's not a sustainable thing. Last year he shot nearly 40%. From three, although that is expectable to be a statistical variation on his like 34-35% career average. So he's going to be better than what he shot so far, which has been pretty dreadful. You know, with George Hill at seventh in box score plus minus, Jeff Teague so far has been somewhere, I think, like around 350 in the league. So like, pretty atrocious, but I mean, that'll round into form. What I don't expect to get any better, though, is his defense, which has been, I mean, last year, towards the end of the season, he was literally the worst point guard defender in the league. And I think we've seen the consequences of switching from a guy who honestly could shut down Kyle Lowry in the first round of the playoffs to a guy who, again, like literally might be the worst point guard defender in the league.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Another component of it is like the way the Indiana Pacers have to play defense too, with an undersized Monte Ellis at shooting guard is basically the size of a point guard.
Yeah.
They're always out of rotation when the like the oversized, you know, like Giannis, Dwayne Wade. Yeah, because they played the Bulls, so Dwayne Wade, the Bucks, Giannis, and then you have they had Michael Kidd-Gilchrist as Monte Ellis's assignment last night, and he scored like 10 10 early points within the first couple of minutes. So they're always out of rotation when there's a big mismatch because they just either post him up right from the beginning or they just pile drive him, and he just can't overcome it.
Yeah, I think what you see then is just that the Pacers are in this really bad position where even teams like Brooklyn, even teams that are near the bottom of the league, have multiple offensive options, and there's sort of an inevitability in terms of the defense breaking down because, I mean, you can probably hide one player at a time, but especially if the point of attack for your defense, if you're going to play a system that has both guards as Monta Ellis and Jeff Teague, it's going to collapse the zone every single time if you're running zone. And if you're not, it's just going to kill help defenders, or someone is just going to walk into the paint and score, which is, I think we've seen both of those realities play itself out.
Yeah, for sure. Because I've seen Thaddeus Young and even Miles Turner completely out of rotation because they have to over-rotate even one, two, three times sometimes in a single half-court sequence. So it's just a lot to overcome right now. And it just appears like they need a new, how the league's transitioning to like two wings at the shooting guard, small forward spot in terms of size. It seems like they need to get like a wing size player so they can switch and not have mismatches from size standpoints on that perimeter, because it's becoming a pretty significant defensive liability.
Yeah, I mean, definitely pretty significant. I mean, for a team, Vogel, and we'll see what happens in Orlando. They're still rounding into form. But Vogel in Indiana had not coached a team under... They had that 1 year when Paul George was sitting. And even then, I think they finished eighth in the league in defensive rating. And now, meanwhile, their defensive rating this year so far has been 28th in the league. And today's, November 8th? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so today's November 8th, and thus far their defensive rating is 28th in the league. And even more troubling is the opposing team's effective field goal percentage is 29th. So what that sort of tells you is that they're not defending the three-point line well. They're fouling a little bit too much, basically because having a front line of Monta Ellis and Jeff Teague essentially means that you're going to walk into the paint. And then I really like Miles Turner. I think that everyone really, for the most part, likes Miles Turner. But he, at this point in his career, is just not a rim protector in a classical sense. He's more of an off-ball shot blocker, sort of like Serge Ibaka. You know, he can't really body people up. He's not going to be like Roy Hibbert. He's not going to, be like Andrew Bogut and have sort of the intelligence to be able to, stop people on drives. And at the very least, he doesn't have the conditioning and the lateral movement to be able to stop multiple offensive tries. So as long as you don't have guys who are just, really forcing up shots, if you have pretty much any ball movement on offense, it's just been killing the Indiana Pacers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because I noticed last night and throughout a couple of the games, Miles Turner and their forwards, they've had a good, run at getting down the court in the transition defense. But the problem is, it seems like they just haven't found a way to wire together. Like, if you know what I mean, like they just don't communicate well at this point, because Miles Turner, there's a couple times where he gets buried under the basket in transition defense, and then they allow a rotation to the opposite side and it's a wide open layup. And just a lot of breakdowns right now, because the whole defense was supposed to be hinged upon that 3 through 5 being able to rotate and cover up the 1 through 2 positions mistakes. But right now they aren't communicating well and rotating sufficiently to be able to overcome that. And then you're seeing chain reaction ball movement ripping them apart, drive and dish ripping them apart, the in and out game from the post, all that good stuff is just basically everything is ripping them apart right now, because that 3 through 5 positions aren't really overcompensating for the 1 through 2 at this moment.
Yeah, and we talked about earlier the possibility that putting CJ Miles and at least having one of the two guards who can body up their defensive assignment, because I think it would do a lot for this defense if Paul George can cover the best wing creator in terms of the opposing team's offensive creator. And then CJ Miles can marginally cover the better guard offensive player in terms of creation. And generally, for the most part, that's why you can hide guys like Monte Ellis on just whatever shooter they plop in the corner, because, you know, unless you're a team like the Warriors, you aren't going to have much more than two primary offensive creators on the court at any given time. So, I mean, CJ Miles would be better. He's hardly a lockdown defender, and, I mean, it's going to be problematic for him to keep up with a guy like Chris Paul or a guy like, God forbid, Steph Curry. But, you know, looking maybe deeper on the bench, do you have any solution to this? Because I think we can both agree that Monte Ellis probably needs to go to the bench at this point.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he needs to go to the bench where he can also, for both sides of the ball, because he has a 14% usage rate, which is almost exactly half what he had his final year in Dallas. It's just he's not getting, the ball's not in his hands, and he's a liability on defense for his size. Because to be fair, he gives the effort. It's just that sometimes effort isn't enough when you're tiny in comparison to your mismatch. And then you don't have the length to contest the shots. You get bodied up. It's just a big mess. And the pick and roll is a disaster, too, when you have a two guard being able to body you into a pick. So there's a lot of issues there. But, yeah, for sure, like the CJ Miles, he's probably the best solution. But I don't see any other on-roster solution at this time. I would have to see like a small trade for like a PJ Tucker, someone like that, who you can kind of be like the Thabo Sefolosha of, you know, like when Oklahoma City made it to the finals, kind of like just a 3-and-D type forward for that starting lineup. But yeah, I don't really see a on-roster solution to it.
Yeah, and we talked about the possibility of pulling off a trade for the Pacers and going after a guy like that. The problem is, especially a role player like a 3-and-D guy who can play sort of the wing position and potentially like the two. So a guy who can play 2 through 4 marginally on defense and also shoot threes, that just doesn't really exist in the league right now in terms of guys who are, hey, you know, I want to unload, you know, this role player who's extremely valuable. So you brought up the idea of making a trade, and that's something that that Larry Bird has made clear. He's made some aggressive roster moves. I believe that he would do that. I just, you know, one, I don't see what the Pacers have that is of equal value for a guy who can play that role. And then beyond that, Indiana has tried to make moves similar to that in the past, going for a guy like Budinger and even drafting a guy like Glenn Robinson, and it just hasn't worked. I don't really trust Larry Bird's instinct in terms of making a midseason acquisition. So let's just stick with PJ Tucker unless you have someone else. What do you think that the Pacers could potentially offer for PJ Tucker? Because I just don't see it.
My goal, like when I'm searching for them, is to kind of find someone they can, like a bad team with a youthful core, where they can kind of send one of their young, one or two of their young prospects, maybe with a second round pick. Like maybe a Glenn Robinson, Rakeem Christmas, or Joe Young type, you know, prospect along with draft compensation, or find a team that would need a veteran guard and try to trade Rodney Stuckey since he has a player option after this year, and then they could transition Monte Ellis fully to the bench and then balance out that whole scoring attack on the 1 and 2 units. So that's basically what it is. Like, try to find a youthful team that has a player that matches that description, where they can't really utilize them within their core's timeline. So you can kind of send them youthful prospects also, or just find a team that desperately needs a veteran guard, which there aren't really many at all, who may also take a protected first round pick or other compensation like those young prospects.
Yeah. And you know, the only team I could see maybe pulling the trigger on something like that is, I was thinking before this podcast, maybe, I mean, Sacramento's sort of been bad, really bad. And part of that might be solved. I mean, part of that will be solved with Darren Collison coming back. But they still have this issue of offensive creation. And plus, on top of that, Aaron Aflalo is garbage. And Darren Collison has sort of proved that he can play off ball a bit and still be successful in that role. So I don't think Monte Ellis is going to be a productive player, especially in starting minutes at this point in his career. But that being said, the Sacramento Kings are just kind of silly, and they do have so many players at that combo guard. So, yeah, I mean, I could see them, you know, really screwing up and trading Omer Caspi, which would be awesome. But, like, at least a guy like Matt Barnes or, you know, a guy like Ben McLemore, I mean, even Aaron Aflalo, who I don't think is good, would be a better fit at least over Monte Ellis, you know?
Yeah, because then you put the ball back into Paul George's hands and Jeff Teague's hands, and there's balance.
Yeah, and that's really a crucial thing with this team. And I think the biggest mistake they've made in terms of roster construction, you know, everyone sort of understood that it was going to be problematic, or at least for the people who were low on the Pacers, or for the people who are like, wait, hold up a second, you know, I'm not sure this team is as good as the consensus maybe thinks that it is. Part of the reason for that is because they have so many ball handlers, and they have so many guys who want to have the ball in their hands and are almost, you know, ineffective or neutered by not having the ball in their hands. So I think the key functional reason for that is if you have a superstar and you're taking the ball out of his hands, you're making a serious mistake. You know, like, I'm honestly a little bit shocked that they haven't just put Paul George in a situation where he's the primary offensive creator, he's the guy who has the ball in his hands, and he's the preeminent threat, and then just put spacing around him. It just seems like they've been totally off, like, I don't get it, honestly.
Yeah, like, I honestly think it's kind of like a patchwork type roster construction, because they already added Monte Ellis before they, you know, like before they added Teague. So I kind of feel like the goal was to add playmaking, but they were willing to sacrifice off ball presence. And that was a disastrous mistake, because you have to have at least some degree of off ball presence. And I was also thinking, I don't know if this would, you know, because of the relationship here, but what about like a Wesley Matthews situation, you know, like, because Dallas, they have complimentary players. Would do you think they would take maybe Monte Ellis and draft compensation for Wesley Matthews and like Lavoie Allen?
Yeah, I don't think that they would, but I get where you're going with that. I think that they would. I think that they might, for Rakeem Christmas and like an unprotected pick, and then Monte Ellis would sort of need to be part of that just to make the contracts work. Yeah, I could see that definitely. They're pretty lacking as far as creation. And of course the Monte Ellis Dirk Nowitzki combo really worked. Yeah, no, I understand that reasoning. I definitely do. I think there might be hard feelings though, as far as them not being willing to extend very much money at all to Monte after his contract was up in Dallas, you know?
Yeah, that was basically the first thing that I got from everybody, where it was like, that makes basketball sense, because they need creation, we need floor spacing, because they kind of ran out of dynamic talent in Dallas. But the whole thing is that, you know, Mark Cuban, Monte Ellis dynamic, where they kind of chose trying to sign DeAndre Jordan over bringing him back.
Yeah, that's a problem, and it's also a problem because Dirk increasingly hasn't been able to play real time, and Monte Ellis just really wasn't effective without Dirk Nowitzki. Because, I mean, you look at a guy like J.J. Barea. J.J. Barea looks like he's superhuman when he's playing pick and roll with Dirk, because, like, anyone can, you know, especially guys like J.J. Barea and Monte Ellis. I would put them offensively in the same role. It makes some sense. I think that they're committed enough to Wesley Matthews that they just don't see something like that happening. I think you would really need to target, and you know, as silly as some of the decisions that the Mavericks have made recently, they're just not incompetent, you know. I think that you would need to target a front office that's borderline incompetent to really make something like that work. So I mean, like, maybe Jeff Green or something, might work.
What about Robert Covington from Philly?
You know, Robert Covington would be amazing, but I mean, what do the Pacers have?
What do you think they would want, like, Philadelphia in return for one of their, like, what's their philosophy, do you think?
Philadelphia?
Yeah, like, what type of ideal compensation do you think they would, like, what type of, would they want, like, a veteran, or would they want, like, draft compensation?
Well, I mean, I don't think they would want Monte Ellis. I think that he doesn't fit the culture. And I think that they, for the most part, have enough in terms of draft picks. I don't think that they're looking for much more. You know, the problem is, what the 76ers are desperate for right now is shooting, and so they might be a little bit interested in Aaron Brooks, but, I mean, the Pacers' big problem is that they don't have shooting. And, you know, Robert Covington would just be a huge loss for the 76ers in terms of being able to space the floor. You know, I mean, he started off to a slow start, but, I mean, that's sort of how it goes with three-point shooters. You know, I mean, Klay Thompson has started out shooting like 20% from three, but, I mean, the Warriors aren't expecting that to continue, you know, and we've talked about some scenarios, but it's just, you know, we can only speculate. And I think that continuously, it's just like you run into the problem that the Pacers have done a really poor job just stocking up with good players, you know. That's pretty much it. I just don't think that they have valuable assets.
They definitely don't, because they have pieces, some pieces left over from previous like team visions, like Rodney Stuckey, and then that's not really the ideal mold of a player like you would want at the shooting guard position at this era of the NBA. You want three-point shooting, not, you know, ball handling and lane penetration, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's not that that isn't a valuable thing in the NBA. It's just like, again, if you have a superstar, you put the ball in his hands. It doesn't make any sense not to. And I mean, the more guards that you put out there, the more guys who are demanding the ball, even, you know, like Miles Turner is almost a bit of a problem alongside Paul George, because Miles Turner makes a lot. I mean, he's been a lot better this season about just being a catch and shoot guy. But really, I see him at his most effective as sort of a post guy, as a, like a mid-range presence who sort of creates his own shot back to the basket, and, you know, in face-up situation where his arms are just so long and he's so tall that he can just shoot over guys. Even that doesn't make too much sense next to Paul George. So one of the things we talked about is, you know, Larry Bird has been willing to, you know, make big trades mid-season, but he's also been willing to, for the most part, shut it down and tank for a draft pick. Do you see that happening?
With Paul George, I highly doubt it. They've always said, I know sometimes they say things and they don't really mean it, but they say they're fully committed to trying, you know, to compete for a title. So I don't think they're in that mode right now. Unless it's absolutely disastrous, then maybe.
Well, I mean, it looks like that might be the case. They have the worst defense in the league, right?
Yeah. I get what you're saying. But I mean, like I know it right now it looks bad, but I mean, if that continues for like maybe 15 games, then yeah, I'd say that's probably a possibility.
Yeah, no, I think that's a distinct possibility, because Larry Bird too, and you know, I have some real concerns about Larry Bird as in a front office position in the modern NBA. You know, and we'll probably touch on that before we're done talking about the Pacers, but Larry Bird just seems extremely out of touch with his players. He doesn't really communicate. Paul George said one time that he doesn't know where Larry Bird's office is. And that's just sort of a microcosm of how much he doesn't understand the current climate of the NBA locker room, you know. And you can even trace that back to the idea that, okay, we need to fire our coach every 3 years rather than someone who has been successful facilitating relationships with their guys. And then now you bring in Nate McMillan, who is just sort of like not a compelling head coach pick, and especially not compelling in terms of what this Pacers team wants to run. And you know, I mean, Paul George has expressed you know, I mean, he just got fined $15,000 for kicking the ball into the stands. And he's expressed that, you know, he really feels like his voice isn't made clear in the management in terms of, like, player acquisition or the direction that they're heading. So I could just see Larry Bird being so disconnected from the reality of the Pacers roster and specifically Paul George that he would think that it would be acceptable to Paul George and he would just be like, you're a player, you don't get to have a voice in this, and tank anyways. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely understand what you're saying. But then again, yeah, you know, we have that whole thing where he basically lied to David West and Roy Hibbert, or not Roy Hibbert, but he lied to David West about, you know, the player option or whatever. I don't remember the exact situation, but David West did not leave on a good note, and Roy Hibbert certainly didn't. So there definitely is like a player disconnect there.
Yeah, I think that the biggest problem with the Indiana Pacers is honestly Larry Bird. He's been good at drafting, but I don't think that that makes up for the toxicity that's inherent in having a guy like Larry Bird who believes all of these really antiquated ideas about how a team should be run and operated and how player personnel should be decided. And I mean, he wanted to go small and score a bunch of points, and the Pacers offense is marginally better. But I mean, it's pace and space, you know, like he just totally missed the boat on the fact that you need to have shooting to make it work. And I just, you know, after the whole Malice in the Palace incident, they flushed out the organization from the ground up and really, you know, sort of slash and burnt. And they traded Rick Carlisle, who was an awesome coach. But, I mean, that might have even been the right decision because everyone essentially needed to go out after that incident. The only remaining figure, as far as I can tell, is Larry Bird. And I think he's toxic, honestly. I think he is a real problem. And the Pacers essentially can't succeed until he's gone.
Yeah, I can understand your take. Like, I also think, like, the way he builds rosters, he doesn't like to take, he takes calculated risks. He doesn't like to take, you know, he doesn't like to load up on heavy salary cap signings that don't necessarily look perfect. Like, I remember the offseason when Paul George, you know, like, last offseason when he was about to come back, like, for the first time for the full season. They only signed, I think the only move they really made was Monte Ellis, and they didn't really do anything outside of that at all, like, for the entire offseason. So, like, and then he slowly adds pieces, but then he does it too slowly to where some pieces become outdated, like Rodney Stuckey, and then there really isn't much balance on the roster, and he doesn't take those risks to add that balance. So it's like he limits their potential without adding those cohesive, like, complementary players around his core pieces.
Yeah, and, you know, that's sort of a greater, you know, meta idea almost. It's at least intangible. I could be totally wrong in terms of the dynamic of Larry Bird. So let's touch on a point that you brought up there, which is I think that it's an ostensible thing and like a tangible thing that the roster construction of this team is significantly flawed. I think that there's a way that they can change things around to make the starting lineup work. I think that that's possible. I think that it just, the problem there, you know, you put in CJ Miles, and then I think that that would be a significant deal. And then you either see if Al Jefferson can start at center, and that gets Miles Turner back to his natural defensive role as a power forward. I think at this point he's like a weak side shot blocker, essentially, like I was saying, Serge Ibaka, sort of that type of thing. And I think he's incredibly effective at that. I mean, he is averaging 2.6 blocks, but their rim protection numbers are atrocious, like worse than the league. And, I mean, the Pacers' most effective lineup last year, especially in the playoffs, was Jan Mahimi and Miles Turner. So I don't think that they have an answer as a rim protector, but they might be able to compensate for it just by having Al Jefferson. And, like, at least Al Jefferson is, I mean, he's never been a good defender, but, you know, he's at least demonstrated that he can be the starting center on a top 10 defense when he was playing for the Hornets and starting at center. And Steve Clifford coached that team into having a top 10 defense. What do you think about the possibility of doing that and sort of, you know, playing a bench unit around, you know, Thaddeus Young and Monte Ellis as two of the key components.
That's a interesting thing. I think actually someone on Twitter had that exact same idea a couple hours ago that I was contemplating. I didn't really like it at the surface, but then I'm going to try to think of it right now. So, like, the thing is, you would definitely, I think this team definitely needs to make a minor move regardless, because then when you do that, then you have, you got Aaron Brooks, Rodney Stuckey, Monte Ellis, and then you have Miles Turner and, oh, wait, no, Thaddeus Young, right? You said Thaddeus Young on the bench?
Yeah, Thaddeus Young off the bench.
Thaddeus Young, and then who was the backup center? It would be Kevin Serafin, right, if you have Miles Turner at power forward?
Yeah, and, I mean, another possibility I was going to bring up is I think that Miles Turner and LaVoy Allen might make some sense.
Yeah, like, the problem with LaVoy Allen is that he's literally only made one jump shot all season. Like, it's just awful spacing with him on the floor. It's like he's a complete offensive liability, but he gets, like, defensive production. So I try to get him out of the picture, like, I guess, if you can.
But I think that, you know, say your lineup is Miles Turner. I think, you know, Miles Turner's awesome, too, because he provides such unique spacing in terms of he's just super deadly from mid-range and, like, long-distance mid-range, and he hasn't shown a propensity to really knock down three-pointers, and that's pretty troubling, but he still is clearly spacing the floor in an effective way, and I think that you can deal with LaVoy Allen at power forward as long as you have Paul George, CJ Miles, and Jeff Teague at point guard. I mean, that you would only have one really significantly below average spacer in terms of that, and you would have his rebounding, you would have his hustle. I think he's significantly more mobile than Al Jefferson is at this point, and he is at the very least could be a guy who body ups on centers and is just big, you know, and it again allows Miles Turner to be at his most effective as a weak side shot blocker.
Yeah, the only thing I really see with Miles Turner at power forward is that the power forwards can really just blow by him and give him problems like that. Because I remember last season, whenever they faced a team, like especially Charlotte, I know they had problems like yesterday with Charlotte, but like particularly last year with teams that had a small ball power forward, it would just like they would just blow by him. That he couldn't be a big factor in helping defense because he didn't rotate fast enough. And I believe from a statistical overall standpoint, I believe I saw that he was like kind of considerably better at center than he was at power forward.
Well, yeah,
I don't know about the unit standpoint, but like the individual numbers.
Well, and that's sort of the point, right? Is I'm saying that defensively, Miles Turner should be playing the power forward. So LaVoy Allen would be playing center.
Oh, no, I was thinking he's better at the center position. That's the Miles Turner.
Oh, Miles.
That's what I saw.
Oh,
yeah, no, I saw like advanced metrics.
I don't think so.
You don't? Because I remember seeing something where I forgot where it was, like the biggest like it was a chart where it had the biggest differences between a player playing one position and another position, and I believe it was he was worse at power forward in comparison to center, and he was one of the biggest. He was like I believe 7th or something like that on that list, where it was like the biggest disparities between his it might have been plus minus.
Well, I mean, first of all, the defensive strategy is just completely broken. So that might be the case for this season. But last year, I think it's pretty undeniable that the most effective defensive lineup for the Pacers was Miles Turner at the power forward and Jan Mahimi at the center. It's a novel idea to be playing Thaddeus Young and to be switch heavy at the power forward, but you just can't really run an efficient switch scheme with Monte Ellis and Jeff Teague at the point of attack again. Like, that's just not going to work. And plus, Paul George is such a good guy to dig and sort of play free safety on defense and play a little bit of zone and compensate for some of those defensive weaknesses that, again, like, it just doesn't really make any sense to me to be playing a switch-heavy defense. And, you know, at least if you have Miles Turner and, like, a real center who can, you know, again, marginally rim protect. I mean, the Pacers sort of demonstrated that that was an extremely effective defensive lineup.
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean. I think there's two ways you can, like, pursue a patchwork, you know, roster fix midseason. I think you go that way if you want to. If you want to do that with, you know, Al Jefferson at center, Miles Turner at power forward. But if you want to continue that switch heavy type philosophy, then you definitely have to either, you know, start CJ Miles at that shooting guard spot or the wing. And if that isn't what you want to do and you want to keep him at the combo forward spot on the bench, then I would say probably, as we were talking about earlier, trading for at least a role player, small forward that has the size for the position and it is at least like a average to quality defender.
And, you know, I think that if you really want to go with offense first, you might be able to. And I mean, honestly, the biggest problem with what I'm about to suggest is that I'm just not convinced that Nate McMillan is a competent defensive strategist in the way that Mike Budenholzer is. But I could see the Pacers sort of running a defense and an offense like the Hawks do, with Teague, of course, at the point of attack. And maybe he can compensate for some of Nate McMillan's shortcomings as a coach. And then CJ Miles is Kyle Korver, I think, is a decent facsimile. And then Paul George, honestly, plays a whole lot of wing defense. And again, like on the Hawks, Paul Millsap, you know, gets a whole lot of steals. He, you know, plays a ton of free safety for them. He, you know, often guards wings. So I think that, you know, defensively and offensively, Paul Millsap and Paul George could be pretty similar. And then, you know, maybe, honestly, like, I don't know. This is the biggest problem with the Hawks game for me. Maybe you could make Thaddeus Young work as like a Damari Carroll, because, you know, I think at least if he's a corner three-point shooter, he might not just be completely trash. So, I mean, what do you think about that possibility? And then you could really legitimately switch, I think, because it would basically be Jeff Teague and then Miles Turner and then, you know, like three similarly sized wings. And defensively, then you can switch. And, you know, I could see that working. Again, like, it would be better if they could pull off a trade or have a coach who isn't sort of garbage. But if Nate McMillan can pull together something similar to that, then it could work. It's just, it's such a complex scheme, and the Hawks have had so much continuity over the years that they've been able to pull it off, and I just am not convinced that the collective defensive IQ of the Pacers could pull that off. And it's disappointing that Nate McMillan didn't understand that and really try to implement that in the preseason, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think that's the philosophy I've been trying to, you know, like, over the, I think even during the offseason, I've been trying to, you know, kind of get in my hypotheticals and ideas to pursue is getting one of those forwards similarly sized to Paul George and Thaddeus Young at that, like, so you can have a 2-4 where you can switch and make up for, you know, Jeff Teague's inability or deficiencies, I should say, on defense. So I think that's definitely what I would pursue. Because then that kind of keeps the model of what they were trying to originally construct intact with Thaddeus Young at the four and then Miles Turner at the five. Because I think that's definitely what they want to do. So I think that's more likely what they would pursue. Because I think that's actually what they were trying to do with Rudy Gay. Because I think some people didn't quite realize there were two separate occasions that they tried to acquire Rudy Gay. One was before the draft, which I believe was for that power forward spot at least. Because then they ended up being able to acquire Thaddeus Young. But then there were second talks, like I believe in free agency was getting going to get Rudy Gay again. And I believe it was to be able to have that 2-4 where you can switch to be able to cover up Jeff Teague. So I think that's definitely what they should try to do. And I think that's likely what they would do if they were to say, hey, this really isn't working at all and we need to make some changes.
Yeah, so then you're relying on Rudy Gay to be a competent defensive player, which might work in his contract year, but that contract is only going to look worse and worse as it goes on if they sign him to like a 4-year contract, which is I think what he wants at this point. And I think that once he gets that money, he will revert to Rudy Gay caliber defense, which is not compelling. And plus, and this points out another huge reason that I had problems with the Indiana Pacers going into this year. You know, Paul George, even Paul George, who is hands down the most effective scorer on the Pacers. He has never – he's had 1 year that he's put up above average efficiency for a starter, and that's okay. You know, I mean, Russell Westbrook has been in similar positions, but Russell Westbrook has also typically had Kevin Durant and, like, a defensive backbone with, like, Serge Ibaka and stuff. And it also was okay for Paul George in the past because, you know, they had a super elite defense. So, you know, even your superstar is, you know, one of the superstars who isn't particularly efficient. And when you add guys like Jeff Teague, also not particularly efficient, Monte Ellis, God knows he's not efficient. And Miles Turner, I think, is going to regress to the norm just because of the shots that he's taking. Just, you know, he's clearly a great player, but I mean, I really don't think it's realistic to think that he's going to continue hitting at the rate that he's been hitting. I think that it's going to be really, really, really difficult for them to run an efficient offense. And of course, like, we've been talking about all the defensive limitations they have as well. So, I mean, I honestly just think it's going to go downhill from here for the Pacers. And yeah, and I think that the seams are starting to show and they're unraveling a little bit. I mean, what do you think? I mean, how do you think that they can run an efficient offense?
For the offense, well, you're definitely right about the seams unraveling. I think with the current construction, I think a lot of fans, including me, did not like it. You know, like, in the sense where they have that, like, too many, they don't have balance. That's the whole thing. That's the word I'm looking for, is balance. So, like, the way they won't have an efficient offense if they do not find a way to develop that balance. And they definitely have to make one move to be able to balance both lineups, since they like to roll out an all second unit lineup for stretches. So,
which is really silly to me.
Yeah, it is, because I remember I was messaging you that Chicago Bulls game. This, like, every time they come out to play the second quarter, it's the first 6 minutes. That's usually how it is, but they changed that recently where they mash it up a little bit. But it's usually that first 6 minutes in the second quarter and fourth quarter, which the fourth quarter, you should definitely not do that. That's terrible. That's why they were one of the poorer fourth quarter teams. Like, Dwayne Wade in that first Chicago game, he was going against Joe Young and Glenn Robinson III as in their backcourt, and he led them to a 19-0 run, and then the game was over in the second quarter. It was a tightly contested first quarter, but the way they choose their lineups and their matchups, Nate McMillan's not conscious about it, and then there's liabilities where they get ripped apart. Like, last game, there was a Lavoy Allen, Al Jefferson front court against Frank Kaminsky and Marvin Williams, and then they're running around looking very, like, unathletic and slow because they don't close out well, and then they're a complete non-factor in help defense, and then they get shredded in lane penetration because they're out of rotation, and then there's nothing you can do about it. They go on a big run when you're already down 9 at that start of the second quarter, and then it's all of a sudden it's too deep of a hole to get out of, and there's no margin for error. So it's like Nate has a lot of problems as a coach. Like, the rotations have been bad, his choices. And they lead to large runs where they can't dig themselves out of. But, like, back to that efficiency question, they definitely, if they want to have, you know, like, from a progression standpoint where you're saying, hey, let's fix our starting lineup first and worry about the rest later, you definitely have to start CJ Miles. He's been one of the most efficient shooters. I know last season a lot of people will say, you know, how he regressed, you know, how he went on that large drought. But I feel like there was definitely correlation between having to bang down low at power forward.
Exactly.
Because
yeah.
Yes, with their roster deficiencies last season, there was definitely correlation.
Yeah. 100%.
So I think I definitely think he can have consistency this year if you keep him in that sound role where he doesn't have to bang down low. And then I think they could have high quality starting lineup with Teague. And then, because if you think about it, like, Teague, Miles, George, or you can even go Teague, George, Miles, Young and Turner, and have George handle the ball more. Because the thing I'm looking at is on defense, kind of like what they did in their heyday when they, you know, like in the playoffs, they'd even cross match Paul George, even be on John Wall and Jeff Teague when they were an Eastern Conference Finals, like, team that back to back seasons. So I think what they could do, as you're, I think you were touching on this earlier, where the superior dynamic wing that they have, Paul George would check, and Miles is big enough to guard that 2, 3, or 4 usually. So he can guard the inferior wing creator. Usually teams have that 3-and-D player on their wing, so he could check the 3-and-D player on almost every team they have in the NBA. I think only Chicago is a team that doesn't have a pure shooter, and there may be a few more that I'm forgetting, but you get the point where it's like a lot of them have a pure shooter. He can just, that sits in the corner of the wing. He can just follow him off ball, running through screens and all that stuff. So I think their defense would improve by eliminating that Monte Ellis size mismatch, since they can have, they can improve their switching, their pick and roll defense. So they wouldn't be basically working from behind, from the sense that they're out of rotation and all that good stuff. They basically have more of an honest approach. And then offensively, too, they have more floor spacing. The ball would be in their best creator's hands, which is starts with Paul George, then you have Jeff Teague. And then you have quality relief options on offense across the board when those two players have the ball in their hands. And the other players are also like Turner, Young, and even Miles. He's shown he can drive the lane when it's a straight line drive and stuff like that. They can create too in certain extents. So I think you could definitely solve a lot of problems by simply starting CJ Miles. And then if you want to fix that bench unit, which you probably would need to, because you'd have an overload of small guards with Brooks, Ellis, and Stuckey. You need to probably trade one of them for a combo forward, and then you could have a significantly improved team. I think that was the vision a lot of people had for him, and I kind of viewed this as a team that is set up to make another move and isn't quite a finished product.
Yeah, I pretty much universally agree with all of that. And then you just start to run into the issues of, is Nate McMillan, again, like a competent enough defensive conductor that he could pull that type of defense off, especially without the time to implement a real system? Because, again, we were talking about like a Mike Budenholzer-esque system, and that takes time and it takes continuity and it takes a coach of the year, Mike Budenholzer. You know, at the very least, in a scenario like that, you would have Miles Turner instead of Al Horford, which I think compensates for a lot of the problems that Al Horford has had the last few years in Atlanta. I think Miles Turner has a much higher upside as a rebounder and as a rim protector, especially one who would work in like a switch heavy defense. But he's a sophomore, and I'm not sure that's going to work now. And again, that type of style just takes coaching. And then beyond that, I'm not sure that they have particularly high IQ players. I don't think that that's been something that Larry Bird just put a premium on. I think he almost is a little bit condescending in terms of he just sort of sees all of the players on his roster as sort of pawns, so he doesn't think that any of them have the intellectual capability anyway, so it's not something that he pays attention to. And then, you know, beyond that, like, plus you run into another problem of, you know, can you make a move for a combo guard who can shoot threes and play defense? Like, I don't think that you can. I think that that is in way too high demand to be realistic, and the Pacers just don't have the pieces. So, do you see the Pacers turning this around? And if so, then where do they go from here? Do they make the playoffs? Do they do it in time to make the playoffs? And if they don't make some of the fixes that we both agree that they need to, I mean, how bad do you think they can be? Because honestly, like, I think that I projected them as, you know, bottom three in the East this year at the start of the season.
you know, it's just like hard to digest all of the differences in what I've seen. You know, like, there's really high and there's really low. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like there's a third in the East, or it's like this team's like, you know, as you said, like 12th or stuff like that. I think with the current situation they have, I saw Nate McMillan said they're not making lineup changes right now. So I don't know if they'll be quick to make changes, because they haven't made rotation changes throughout games either. So it seems like they're not ahead of the curve on issues that develop and that they're currently facing. So I think it will become problematic to the point where they'll have to address it.
because Paul George is getting frustrated. I think a lot of players on the team are getting frustrated. So if they don't make changes and I just simulate the season in my mind, I think they'd be a low playoff team, like seed-wise, as their ceiling. But I think they could really turn it around if they do add that, like, a one complimentary player. Because I know we keep going back to that, but I think that it's so important. And I think they can pull it off if they're willing to trade maybe that 2018 pick. Because if you want to turn it around to keep, you know, like to for sure keep Paul George willing to return, because I know there's been no indication of him leaving or staying, whatever. They want to figure that out later. So I think if you really want to make the most out of the core to keep him like willing to stay, you got to get that balance. And then I think the results will flow from there. So I think if you're willing to trade a 2018 pick, because you don't want to trade this year because you'll have lower potential, like significantly lower potential than that 2018 season, because Miles Turner gets better and then there's continuity built from the core players. So I think that if you can trade like maybe Stuckey or those lower like level prospects like Robinson or Joe Young with that 2018 pick, I think you can take a lower level 3-and-D, you know what I mean? Like PJ Tucker for the bench and then start CJ Miles.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've talked about, I think, the discrepancy in value there even. I mean, I think that PJ Tucker is more valuable, if only because, you know, he's won teammate of the year a couple of times. He's at the very least like a foundational part of the Phoenix Suns in terms of culture. And I mean, you know, maybe, you know, if they can pull it off, if they can find a deal hidden somewhere. I think that Larry Bird certainly, once I think he starts to see how this team is unraveling, I think Larry Bird is going to be willing to make a move. But my listeners know how I feel about the Pacers at this point. And, you know, I certainly don't enjoy having fans of teams or even reporters of teams on my show and telling them, you know, in doomsday scenarios for the team. So I'm not going to harp on it too much in terms of predicting, you know, imminent collapse or anything like that.
But, yeah. Yeah.
What do you think, would it be absolutely disastrous if Paul George basically made it clear that he wasn't interested in staying with the Pacers? His contract is up after not this season, but next. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So in the past, Larry Bird traded Ron Artest when a similar situation came to play. He traded him to the Kings because it looked like he wasn't willing to re-sign with the Pacers. I think that Larry Bird would be more than willing to do something like that. Would you describe it as a catastrophe if that were to happen? Like, you know, if they got a high draft pick this year and then next year they traded Paul George, like, I don't know, to the Celtics for all the hundreds of things that they have, or, you know, maybe to the Lakers for, you know, Julius Randle and Jordan Clarkson, something like that.
I'm going to put my completely objective non-Pacers bias hat on for a second. You know, like no allegiances to individual players.
Sure.
So, yes. So definitely, I think Miles Turner is going to be a fantastic player. So if you view it at that point where you said like you get a really good draft pick, or not even a really good, just a good draft pick this year, then you can pick up a foundational piece. So you got two right there, and one who's already Miles Turner, who's got to jump on the development by 3 years now.
Yeah.
So You could trade. Well, they also have Thaddeus Young and Jeff Teague, because if you want to just go full team tank, then I think they could really execute it. So yeah, Paul George. I think if you could get one to two very like high potential already contributing foundational pieces, that would be probably really good, because you could match the timeline with Turner more so, and you could just wait out the LeBron, you know, the LeBron James era. Because he's going to be good for a while, you know, because he's feeling great still. He's really good still. The Cavs are great. And then you have the Warriors now and the Spurs. You know, a lot of high elite teams that I don't think they can compete with right now unless they make significant moves to match Paul George's timeline. So I think if you do match Miles Turner's timeline, you get some more
foundational pieces in there. I think it could really work. And then we haven't even talked about Jeff Teague, Thaddeus Young. Well, then again, Jeff Teague wouldn't re-sign in this instance, I would imagine, right? Like, if it goes catastrophically horrible and they suck, I don't know if he'd want to come back.
This is sort of a shot in the dark. At the very least, I trust Larry Bird's ability to find talent in the draft. I think he's shown that that's a thing that he can do better than, honestly, a lot of, you know, primary decision makers for teams. So I would expect that in next year's draft, if they did have a lottery pick, you know, given the saturation of guards and the talent that it looks like, I mean, there's supposed to be 4 top 10 point guards next year. I would expect for them to draft a point guard that they fully expect to be elite down the line. So, and like I said, I'm not sure if Paul George makes a lot of sense with Miles Turner as his wingman, but Miles Turner with like a true point guard wingman makes a lot more sense. So yeah, if they drafted, you know, like a top 10 point guard talent, I can't imagine that they would re-sign Jeff Teague.
Oh no, especially, you know, if, yeah, then, you know, we just get to I think about it, it's an overload of circumstances, because then you still have Monta Ellis on the roster. Rodney Stuckey would probably be gone. It's just hard, because then you hit this, situation where it's like, what pieces do we keep? Because Paul George is still around. I think they'd have a good amount of, actually, that could be good, because they could have, Monta Ellis go to the bench, and then they have a lot of salary cap because their starting point guard would be a cheap rookie deal player, and then they could try to get that wing. I know it's not a perfect player, but the one that comes to my mind would be Rudy Gay because he's a free agent. But someone like, you know what I mean, like that to fill that starting lineup, and then you'd have Ellis on the bench, and then you could still have some of those pieces around on the bench. So I think that could be a good good recalibration attempt.
Yeah, and honestly, I think that the direction that would go is, you know, starting a rookie point guard has pretty much never worked. So I think that that wouldn't work as a recalibration, but, you know, I mean, potentially it would. It's not really my place to say whether or not that would work. It would have to bear itself out, but you know, to be perfectly frank, I think that the window that the Pacers are going to be able to create anything meaningful around Paul George is gone. And I think that the best case scenario for the Pacers down the line is that Paul George leaves. Well, honestly, that they trade Paul George. Larry Bird loses his job consequently, and that lingering effect of him being a poisonous presence is gone. And they get a bunch of young guys for Paul George, and you know, they have this now elite point guard in Miles Turner, which is a pretty decent foundation. And then, of course, they have whatever they trade Paul George for. And then, you know, like I said, they wait out and try again. Because I think that, you know, this team's peak was demonstrably the Vogel era, where they were 62 win, I think, might have been their peak. And that was their big crack at it. And yeah, I think that, you know, that I think that, you know, it's almost like Paul George owes it to himself to leave at this point.
You know, to me, I kind of disagree, like, to an extent, where I feel if they could save the certain, you know, I mean, like this current layout, if they were to do what we previously discussed. But then if you take that out the window and you look at it now, then I would certainly agree with that, because it doesn't look like they're going to get results. Because if you just stick with what they have now and just simulate it through, then I don't think it has very quality results. And I completely agree with you.
Yeah, but, you know, we can only speculate about the future. I really like the Pacers, you know, as a team. And, you know, I also host Hoops Historians on the network, and I really enjoy their history as an ABA team and, you know, as a Knicks killer. So I certainly wish the best for them. I really don't like a lot of the baggage that comes along with Larry Bird. So, you know, yeah, I wish them the best, and whatever direction that means for the franchise, whether that's rebuilding around Paul George in a significant way, or going with a full rebuild and moving on from the Larry Bird era. You know, whichever works better, that's what I'm pulling for. So anyways, man, my guest today has been Grant Afseth. Remind the listeners again what your Twitter is and where you primarily write.
I primarily write on sneakerreporter.com, and my Twitter at is at Grant AFSETH.
All right, awesome. Well, hey, man, that was a really great discussion. I'll be sure to have you on again, you know, next time I want to talk Pacers. And, you know, it'll be interesting. Like, I definitely will have you back on because, you know, we speculated a lot on this podcast about potential moves and potential futures for the Pacers. So that sort of sets the stage for more conversations down the line. I hope you had a good time on the podcast talking about the Pacers. I'm sorry if I was a little bit apocalyptic. I just am trying to be straightforward. But yeah, man, no, I really enjoyed the discussion. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So one more time for the listeners at home. You've been listening to Almighty Ball and the Almighty Podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Just remember Almighty and Baller and you'll find it. I know there's a lot of, you know, Ballin' Baller. It's fine. Just remember Almighty Baller and you'll find us. Also, you can find us at blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. We're a featured network at Blog Talk Radio, and we have tons of great shows that you should definitely check out. You know, from The Flagrant Take to Brick House. Brick House is awesome. Definitely check out Brick House. To Hoops Historians, really, we have a ton of great shows, and you should check them out. And again, those promo codes I said at the start of the podcast, you're supporting the network every time you use them. Free month of Audible and a free audiobook if you go to audibletrial.com/almighty, and then 20% off your purchase at steinersports.com, and they are the number one sports memorabilia vendor on the net, so definitely check them out. And if you're a Pacers fan, you know, buy some Pacers gear, maybe get a Paul George jersey while you can. Thanks, Grant, I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.